Welcome to the Shiur of the Nezra Parshios Nitzavim Vayelech. Wanted to start tonight with a very somewhat unusual in the Nezra in Parshios Vayelech that may have a certain degree of halachic implications. And then I want to see at length a discussion that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal actually has in the Sefer Emes Yaakov on Chumash based on this Ibn Ezra, where he attempts to show that the position of the Ibn Ezra, although at first glance it appears rather unusual and strange, actually may be the sheets of the position of other Rishonim as well. The Parsha in Vayelech speaks about a mitzvah of Hakel that once every 7 years in the year following Shemitah, the Jews are bidden to come to the Beit HaMikdash, Hakel et Ba'am, gather together the people, Kwanoshim, Ba'anoshim, Ba'taf, men, women, and children. They come to the Beit HaMikdash, and again, as Chazal explicates the mitzvah for us, the Melech, the king, reads from a Sefer Torah publicly in the presence of the people who have come, and this incredible convocation of all the Jews gathering in Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash, with the king, with pomp of ceremony, reading the Sefer Torah, you know, supposed to make such an incredible impression that it's supposed to raise the people to new heights of Yiras Shamayim, of fear of God. The Pasuk itself says, L'man Yishmu, L'man Yilmadu, they should hear the Torah, they should learn the Torah. V'yaru et Hashem Elokeichem, they should fear God. V'shamu Lassos is called Divrei HaTorah Hazos, and they should observe this entire Torah. So, who gets invited? Who gets an e-invite to Hakel? So, the pasuk we mentioned before says, Hakel et Ha'am, gather together the people. Ha'anoshim v'anoshim v'atat, men, women, and children. And Chazal famously comments in the Gemara in Chagiga that the men come to learn in a more in-depth fashion. The women were not obligated in the midst of Talmud Torah, nonetheless come with Shmala to listen, to hear what's going on. The Hataf and the children who come, who are at an age where they're not even of an age to be able to understand what's going on, so the Gemara queries in Chagiga, why are they coming all together? Lama ba? L'osei sachar l'neviyayim. That's where Rashi brings it. The Gemara says, "Vahavi tzchalim v'yayim." The point that the children being brought is that by the adults bringing the children, that in itself is the source of merit and reward for the adults. In other words, the children being brought along not because of the children. The mitzvah is on the parents to bring the children. The children at this point are too young to really understand what's going on. But nonetheless, there's the mitzvah to bring them. There's one category which I didn't mention, which is in the pasuk. The pasuk says, in addition to men, women, and children, the gercha asher bishtarecha, the ger, the stranger in your gates, is invited and obligated to come to hakel as well. Who is this ger asher bishtarecha? So we generally assume that throughout chamishna chumshei Torah, when the Torah uses the term ger, means a convert. In other words, somebody who started off life not being Jewish, converted to Judaism. So the Torah tells us that everybody is obligated to participate in Hakel, men, women, children, and converts. The question presumably is, and that this is presumably at least something that's not in the answer, is why single out converts? And, converts once they convert, so they're Jewish. Period. End of story, right? So men, women, and children, okay, so that's everybody. Of course converts. Converts, redheads, Kohanim, accountants, everybody is supposed to, maybe even lawyers, are supposed to come and participate in Hakel. It's a broad cross-section of society, so converts as well, fine. So perhaps that's what prompts Ibn Ezra to make the following two-word comment. The gercha, the ger, the stranger in your gates, says the Ibn Ezra, what's the purpose of him coming? Ulai yitzyahed, perhaps he will become Jewish. So in two words, Ibn Ezra opened up for us a tremendously different way of looking at this pasuk. According to Ibn Ezra, clearly, the ger who is referenced in this pasuk is not a convert, right? The ger that we're talking about, presumably, is what we refer to as a ger toshav. A ger toshav means somebody who is not Jewish, however, has accepted a certain degree of a monotheistic practice. He's accepted the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, you know, he's accepted the seven mitzvahs, but God gave him no, he's accepted the idea of being a monotheist, he's accepted the basic tenets of morality, right? So the Torah has the concept of a Ger Toshuv. The Rambam talks about how to become a Ger Toshuv, there's actually a formal ceremony in which one has to accept those dictates, and one becomes labeled as a Ger Toshuv. So apparently the Ezra holds that the Ger Toshuv as well is supposed to come to Hakel. Why? Why is Yahay? Perhaps he will become Jewish. Right? And we're, in fact, it sounds like this, but as you say, we're hoping that he's going to move up a notch from going from being a Ger Toshuv to the real thing, to a Ger Tzedek, to a full-fledged convert. We're hoping that this incredible gathering of Hakel will make an impression upon him. And, you know, that would be great, you know, if he would choose to become Jewish as a result of being exposed to the grandeur and the moving sight, which is Hakel. So, in two words, there are many, many things that need to be discussed over here. Right? First of all, the very notion that the Torah would use the term ger in an unqualified fashion to refer not to a convert, but rather to a ger toshuv, is striking. It's true that this is not the only place that the Ibn Ezra interprets this way. In fact, the Ibn Ezra, it seems in general, interprets the word ger as referring to a non-Jew, to a Ger Toshuv, somebody who's, let's say, sympathetic to the Jewish position, but is not actually a convert. To take one example, the Ibn Ezra writes back in the Aseret HaDibros in Parshas Yisro, when the Torah describes the Ten Commandments, we know that the Pasuk speaks about keeping Shabbos, and it says, among other things, Gerecha Shevisarecha, the stranger in your gates should be involved in the keeping of Shabbos as well. As the Kosher Gemara is saying, every Shabbos is part of Kiddush. Right? Zachar Shema Shabbos Lekavso, remember Shabbos to keep it holy. Ato, who should keep Shabbos? Ato, Vincho, Vitecha, Avucha, Vamoscha, Vamzecha, Gerecha Shevisarecha. Right? You, your son, your daughter, your servant, your animal, and the gear in your gates, the stranger in your gates, should also keep Shabbos. Right there, it is, very interestingly, he says, part of what allows a non-Jew to live in Eretz Yisrael, when Eretz Yisrael is under, Jewish control, is that you have to be committed to certain things. You have to be committed to Shabbos Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. You have to be committed to keep Shabbos. You have to be committed to keep Yom Kippur. You have to be committed to keep the whole slew of arayos of prohibited sexual relations that are described in the Torah. Ibn Ezra even goes on to say that you have to be committed to keep the prohibition of eating dam, of eating blood. That's also something which is incumbent upon a Ger Toshuv living in Eretz Yisrael. I shall answer the following question. The Gemara says that a non-Jew is not allowed to keep Shabbos. So here comes Ibn Ezra and he says, the Ger Toshuv is supposed to keep Shabbos and Yom Kippur. And, the Gemara says that a non-Jew is not supposed to keep Shabbos. So stay tuned, let's talk over. There are two ways to answer this. So first of all, Yaakov Kamenetsky, we'll get to in a moment, points out that there's a Rashi in Yevamos who says that although in general a non-Jew does not keep Shabbos, a Ger Toshuv, according to Rashi, would keep Shabbos, right? Because why? The Ger Toshuv has sworn off Avodah Zarah, sworn off idolatry, and the failure to keep Shabbos is tantamount to idolatry. A person who's Mechal Shabbos is like he's over Avodah Zarah. Right? So that could be one thing. In other words, Ibn Ezra is reflecting this unique opinion of Rashi and Yevamos, that maybe a Ger Toshuv is in a different category. Alternatively, the Ibn Ezra reflects this idea about a Ger specifically living in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, Ibn Ezra might tell us as follows. When the Gemara says that a non-Jew shouldn't keep Shabbos fully, it's talking about a non-Jew living outside of Eretz Yisrael. But if you're in Eretz Yisrael, a whole different set of laws apply as part of your contract. To live in Eretz Yisrael, Jewish or non-Jewish, is to keep Shabbos. Right? The point being, the Ibn Ezra there and in other places interprets the word ger as meaning a ger toshuv, not a ger tzedek, not a convert. It's a non-Jew Jewish sympathizer, right, but not an actual Jew, and not a person who's actually converted to Judaism. What's that? Right. So there, that's clearly talking about a get kosher, because you're not going to give a get tzedek a non-kosher piece of meat. Right. That's what clearly talking about. Right. It's just, I think, more often than not, the term ger, you know, kajer kajra, tara atas yelotem, is more often than not, Chazal's interpretation of the word ger in Chumash, is that the ger tzedek, it's a little unusual, but in line with the Ibn Ezra's general shita, that a ger is supposed to be, the word ger is interpreted as a ger kosher, you know, as a general rule. What's also striking about this Ibn Ezra is that it presents a very different attitude towards conversion than one that we're normally accustomed to, right? Generally speaking, we assume that, you know, we don't go around trying to make people convert. There are other religions in the world that go around trying to make people convert, but we're not one of them. You know, we're very happy to leave somebody as a non-Jew. And in fact, we do, as per the Gemara Yavamis, we try to discourage people from converting to Judaism. We try to point out to them all the difficult things that they're taking upon themselves. You know, there's anti-Semitism, you know, there's a lot of business you have to do, you know, it's difficult. You know, here's my tuition bill from yeshiva. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we try to throw at them to try to discourage them. Here, the Ibn Ezra basically says that there's something in Torah to encourage people to convert. Right? We'd like to schlep the Ger Toshev along to Hakel in order to maybe get him to convert. Wouldn't it be nice if he converted to Judaism? Which is a very different attitude towards conversion than what we generally assume.
Especially if it's a Jewish king.
What's that?
Especially if it's a Jewish king.
Yeah.
And Israel isn't oppressed.
Right, I hear that. If anything, the Jewish people are not oppressed, right? They didn't actually accept Congress altogether, right? That's what the Gemara said. They wrote the Talmud Gerim during the days of David and Shlomo because everything was too good. You know, we only accept people when there's a little bit of persecution out there. But, you know, it's interesting that the Ibn Ezra would articulate that because, again, it implies that, you know, we're not so, maybe we shouldn't be so, quick to say that conversion is such a, you know, thing that we discourage, and only when you twist our arms, you know, will we allow somebody to be converted. No, why you say we encourage them to come to Hakel in order to possibly convert. Right. Right. So you might say that. In other words, that, you know, to encourage somebody to go from a Ger Toshev to a Ger Tzedek, that we would like. You know, to encourage somebody to come from nowhere to a Ger Tzedek, maybe we wouldn't necessarily do that. But that's also interesting, because the thing, logically I would think, we'd like everybody ideally to be a Ger Toshev. In other words, we don't want people to not keep the Shevet Mitzvot Bnei Noach. So I would think that if somebody's not keeping the Shevet Mitzvot Bnei Noach, that's where we really like to, you know, bring them in and get them to a higher level. If they're a Ger Toshev, I would think that that's great, you know? I mean, let them stay a Ger Toshev. So is this position of the Ibn Ezra unique to the Ibn Ezra? So in a beautiful piece in the Sefer Emes for Yaakov, Yaakov Kamenetsky Vassal argues that no, and in point of fact, this position of the Ibn Ezra is actually shared by the Ramban and the Rambam. Again, Ibn Ezra, we know, oftentimes marches to the beat of his own drum, right? But the Ramban and the Rambam, I think we would assume, are more conventional, more mainstream. I mean, I don't want to start ranking Rishonim or making such comments, but, I don't think what I just said is incorrect or inappropriate. So, right through the Yaakov Kamenetsky, if you look back in the Ramban, that pasuk in the Aseret HaDibros, right? In other words, that the ger in your gates should keep Shabbos. The Ramban over there writes, you should know al derech hapshat, on a simple level of reading the Torah. The chomakom shenisker gerach asher bisharecha kavanu leger toshav. Whenever the Torah speaks about the ger in your gates, it always means the ger toshav. Now again, that's not the way Chazal always understands it, but the Ramban is speaking from a posture of Pshat, from a simple reading of the Chumash perspective, and he essentially agrees with what the Ibn Ezra says over here, that ger without qualification, ger chashav b'sharecha, means a non-Jew, a ger tosav, you know, who has accepted certain mitzvahs, but certainly not the whole thing. So the Ramban, says Rabbi Yaakov, is in the camp of the Ibn Ezra. They're together. What about the Rambam? So here comes the Yaakov Kamenetsky, and he suggests a very interesting of the Rambam and also Chagiga, where these laws of Hakel apply. So he writes as follows. Mitzvah Hatzei, this is from the beginning of the third parak of Hilchos Chagiga, Mitzvah Hatzei l'hakil es kol Yisrael, it's a positive mitzvah to gather in the entire Jewish people, anashim, the nashim, the taf, men, women, and children, right? V'chol matzoi shmita, every sukkah, every 7 years, you know, in the year following shmita, right? It's a mitzvah to get them together and read the Torah. Where's the source for this mitzvah? Shenemah. Mikesh Sheva Shana B'Marish Nasa Shmita B'Chag HaSukkos B'Vokal Yisrael, close to Pasuk from our Sedra. At the end of every 7 years, Sukkot time, you know, you should gather everyone. Hakel Es Ha'am Ha'anashim V'Anashim V'Atah V'Gercha Shev Yisarecha V'Chulei. Gather the people together, men, women, and children, and the gear in your gates, etc. So says Rabbi Yaakov, why did the Rambam bother quoting the Gercha Asher Bisharecha? It doesn't really add anything to the point the Rambam was making. The Rambam was trying to say that men, women, and children are obligated to come up for Hakel. He didn't say anything about Gerim one way or the other. Why would he quote the Pasuk if you say the Gercha Asher Bisharecha? Alright, so that alone, I don't know if that's the biggest pasha in the world. Okay, he quoted the Pasuk, he quoted a couple of extra words in the Pasuk, you know. I don't know that you could build the whole case on that. But he then goes on to say as follows. Cholach hotter min hara'iyah, hotter min mitzvah hakel. If you're exempt from the mitzvah of ra'iyah, in other words, coming up to the Beis HaMikdash 3 times a year for the Pesach Shavuos and Sukkot, if you're exempt from that, you're also exempt from Hakel. Chutz, except min hanashim, the hataf, the ha'aril. Right? Women who are exempt from coming up 3 times a year have to come to Hakel. Children who are exempt from coming up 3 times a year have to come to Hakel. And an aril, someone who's uncircumcised, is also, although he's exempt from Re'iyah, from coming up 3 times a year, is also chayiv in Hakel. Aval ha-tameh, poter mi mitzvah Hakel. But someone who is tameh, who is impure, is exempted from the mitzvah Hakel. Shenemah bevocho Yisrael, right, it says, when all of the Jewish people come, v'zeh eino roi leviyah. And someone who's tamei is not allowed to come into the mikdash. So Yaakov over here quotes from the Lechem Mishnah as follows: the intama, harei arel gamkein ein aroy leviyah. Moshe Pesach people not look. You're excluding a tamei, somebody who's impure, from hakel. Why? Because he's ein aroy leviyah. Because he can't come into the Beis HaMikdash. He's impure. And arel is also not supposed to come into the Beis HaMikdash, an uncircumcised person. He is Shlomar, right? So answers the Lechem Mishnah. The Hachayr there's this nothing, right? Umash Omer Lamalus Ha'orel and Aroy Lavir, Rishun Zemayis, the Lusagi Ha'chayim, I wish we come in for Ezra's Yisrael, the Chamir Kedushas of Lola Ezra's nothing. The Aroel can't come into the Ezra's Yisrael, he can't come into the main courtyard, but the other, the uncircumcised person, is allowed to come into the Ezra's Nashim. The Ezra's Nashim is a little bit of a misnomer to call it the women's section, right? It was the earlier courtyard, the lower courtyard in the Beis HaMikdash. It was called the women's courtyard because, typically speaking, the women didn't go past there, right? There wasn't quite a women's courtyard in the same sense that, you know, we have a women's section in Shul. In other words, they didn't really have a setup, you know, where people were segregated simply because much of what was going on in the Beis HaMikdash was going on with the Kohanim anyway, so no Yisrael could go there. Right? So the Ezra Zosha was a place where the women would stop, and they would not typically go beyond there, but men would on occasion be there as well, and the whole ceremony of Hachal took place in the Ezra Zosha. Yeah. Oh, okay. So continues with Yaakov as follows. I don't get it, says Rabbi Yaakov. You're telling me the reason the Ariel can come in is because it's only Ezra's Noshim. The Talmud should also be able to go in to the Ezra's Noshim, right? So apparently there's some kind of difference between the Ariel and the Talmud. Where did that distinction come from? So Rabbi Yaakov wants to argue the following very interesting idea. Says Rabbi Yaakov, the Rambam understood, like the Ibn Ezra, that the Ger Toshav is also included in the mitzvah of Hakya. The Ger Toshav, presumably, is uncircumcised. Right? Again, nowadays many people who are, born non-Jewish get a medical circumcision, but certainly that was not the case for much of history. You know, a person wasn't Jewish; it didn't have to be circumcised. They weren't circumcised. Good. So the Ger Toshav is an Ariel. So if the Torah includes the Ger Toshav, as it says, the Ger Hashem Yisarecha, it certainly stands to reason that a Jew who's uncircumcised would be included in the Mitzvah of Hakel as well. So in Meila, you have more or less an explicit pasuk that includes the Ger Toshav, and therefore an explicit pasuk that includes the Ariel. Since we have no explicit pasuk that includes the Tameh, the person who's impure, so there we apply the pasuk that the Vocho Yisrael, he has to be somebody who can go fairly far into the Beis HaMikdash, and this Tameh is precluded from going far into the Beis HaMikdash. So hence, the Tameh is excluded, the Ariel is included, even though in terms of their degree of access, there isn't really a substantial difference between them. And it's an interesting mahalach of Yaakov Kamenetsky has. You would think, again, just to argue the other side, you would think that if there's some kind of requirement that a Ger Toshav actually participate in Hakel, you would think the Rambam would write that out and spell that out in some way. The Rambam was not shy about spelling things out in his Mishneh Torah. He did write 14 books of Halacha. He figured that he should, say that, if that's actually what people are obligated in. But, again, nonetheless, Rabbi Yaakov wants to see from this sort of unusual fact, the distinction between Ariel and Tameh, that perhaps the Rambam, agrees with the Ibn Ezra and considers that the Ger Toshav would be higher than Hakel as well. Ask Rabbi Yaakov, by the way, wait a minute, the Ger Toshav is higher than Hakel. Doesn't that mean that he has 8 mitzvos and not 7 mitzvos to make off? Right? So, it says Rabbi Yaakov is not bothered by that because the status of the Ger Toshav is, in this regard, is similar to the status of the children. The children don't really have an intrinsic mitzvah to come up to Hakel. They're little kids, little kids, toddlers, infants. Right? So this was on the parents to bring them. Here, too, the Ger Toshav has no independent mitzvah to come to the Hakel experience. We, the Jews, have an obligation to try to bring him. Right? So in other words, in that sense, he's almost like an object, if you will. Sort of the same way that the children function as an object. They don't have an independent personal obligation. They have they are acted upon by others. And again, perhaps that's why one wanted to defend Rabbi Yaakov's thesis with the Rambam. Maybe that's why the Rambam doesn't mention explicitly that the Ger Toshav is higher than Hakel, because the truth is, he's not really higher than Hakel. We're chayav, we're obligated to bring him, right? But if he runs away, he doesn't have any personal obligation, to go up and participate. Presumably, in other words, the same way that we have anoshim denoshim. Well, no, in other words, he's not saying that it's Zaka because he's an Ariel. He's saying that a Ger Toshav of any sort is higher. The male Gerim Toshavim are Arelim, so the male we can learn out that he's Yisrael Ariel, would certainly be included. Well, she's no worse than a Ger Zosef. In other words, that's the argument that Yaakov is saying within the Rambam. Right? Interesting. Again, whether the Rambam agrees or not, I think there's room to discuss. Again, Yaakov has this interesting approach within the Rambam. But certainly it's fascinating to consider the Rav Yaakov on his own merits. Rav Yaakov is basically saying this position that there's an Indian to try to bring a Ger Zosef up to Hakel is not simply a position of the Ibn Ezra, who again, you know, in Halacha, I don't know if he's considered to be so mainstream, but the Rambam and the Ramban, you know, two of the mainstream Halachic Rishonim agree with this position of the Ibn Ezra as well. That's what Kishibana Beit HaMikdash, you know, B'mehera, we should be zocha to, you know, to see some kind of sack and see what's going to be with the Gerim Toshavim. What's that? Well, Gerim Toshavim. In other words, there won't be Gerim Toshavim, right? But presumably there'll still be Gerim Toshavim. La Yisya'eh, interesting. That's interesting. Okay, it's a good point. Right, if the Rakhid of Gerim is the most HaMashiach, you know, maybe there'll be a window where they can slip in, you know, in the very beginning. Okay, we'll pick up after my answer. One other short thought from the Ibn Ezra. We'll come out of the Akasha Omer. Okay, welcome to the second half of the Shiur in Ibn Ezra and Parshios Mitzvah and Vayelech. I wanted to just share a brief comment that Ibn Ezra has. Actually, it's longer than the last comment that Ibn Ezra had. But in the last comment that Ibn Ezra had, those two words, we had a lot to talk about here. I think there's less to talk about, but it's a very beautiful idea. It's an idea that Ibn Ezra has in the very beginning of Parshas Vayelech. So the Parshas Vayelech starts off, Vayelech Moshe went, he said all of these words to the entire Jewish people. So the question which is raised by really, not all, but certainly many, many Mepharshim, is, what do you mean, Vayelech Moshe? Moshe went. Where'd he go? In other words, the end of Parshas Mitzavim, so he's talking to the Jewish people, right? And the end of Parshas Mitzavim is telling them all about the importance of Torah, and this is, you know, all of that. Then Vayelech Moshe, he went and he told these things to all the Klal Yisrael. Where'd he go? He's going to Klal Yisrael, so where's he going now? So, there's just a very beautiful, isn't it, Ezra? Right? Halach el kol shevet v'shevet. Moshe Rabbeinu went to each of the tribes individually, to tell them that his death is imminent. That, after all, if you read the parsha, right, that's basically what he says. Vayomer aleihem, that may have etzem shana anochi hayom. He said to the people, I'm 120, you know, years old today. And at the point, it's hard for me to come and go. 120 will be Meichelim, you know. Hashem already told me that I'm not going to cross over the Jordan. So, Rabotai, I hate to say it, I'm not going to be here anymore. That's the message that he's giving to the Jewish people. Yeshua is going to take you into Eretz Yisrael, but I'm bowing out. So how do you convey such a message? Well, in theory, you could have called everybody together and just said, you know, Rabotai, this is it. It's nice knowing you. You know, best of luck. Right? And maybe he would have sent out a pamphlet, you know, they hang up a sign, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, he's going, he's gone. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, that's not the way to do it. This is traumatic, heartbreaking news. I have to go to everyone individually, at least to the shlachim, to the tribes individually, and talk to them to the extent possible. Again, we're talking about a, you know, 2 million plus people, but to the extent possible, I want to talk to them in small groups. I want to talk to them as close to as one as, on one as one possibly can. Shalom yichadu. They shouldn't be afraid. They shouldn't be broken by the news. The chizek libam v'divrei Yehoshua, and he wanted to strengthen them by telling them that Yeshua is going to lead them in. In other words, to the very last day, literally, of his life, Moshe Rabbeinu exhibits one of the great characteristics of a leader, which is the personal touch. Right? If you don't have that personal touch, you know, you can have many, many wonderful things, but you can't really lead the people in the best possible way. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm about to share something with the Jewish people that's going to break their hearts. It's going to be traumatic. They're not going to be able to deal with it. Let me sit them down. Again, it's not one-on-one. In smaller groups, Vayelech Moshe. Let me go to them. let me find them where they are. And that's the proper context in which to convey this this very, very difficult news for them to bear. Then the Ibn Ezra adds the following. Ulafi daiti, right, in my opinion, ki az derach hashvatim. It was at that point that Moshe Rabbeinu recited what we're going to read afterwards in Parshas Mezos HaBracha. The brachos, the blessings that he gives to each of the tribes, which again is the very last section of Chumash, that happened now, says the Ibn Ezra. Makes sense. He went to the tribe of Reuben, so he gave Reuben his bracha. He went to the tribe of Shimon, so he gave Shimon his bracha. You know, Levi, etc., etc., etc. The Imbir Hoseim Mu'charos HaMichtov, even though the brachas are only recorded in the Torah later on, it was at this point, when he was dealing with each shevet individually, that he was able to convey the unique bracha to each of the shvatim, to each of the tribes. Also a tremendous lesson in leadership. You're giving people traumatic news, don't just leave them, Rabosai, I'm dying, it was nice knowing you, right? That's not the way to finish the conversation. I'm passing away, I'm not going to be able to lead you, but here's the blessing, the positive, which is going to be a guideline for you as you go in to the next stage of your national existence, down to the last day. Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Ibn Ezra, is sharing visions and lessons and leadership. The personal touch always ends off with a bracha, you know, and these are things that the Jewish people take with them, you know, even though Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer there. I would imagine, you know, he probably said more. Again, you know, his time was limited. You know, really limited. What's the last day of his life? And he didn't have 12 shvatim to go to. But again, I'm assuming he, you know, there's a certain ability that people have. They can be there for a couple of minutes, but they can make those a couple of minutes very intense and very meaningful. I assume Moshe Rabbeinu has that ability to communicate in that fashion. Which leaves us, you know, an interesting, you know, you know, we read the Zos HaBracha, we have the impression that Moshe Rabbeinu gets up in front of all Klal Yisrael and he says, okay, bum 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 bum, let me lift off the brachas. The other shvatim didn't hear the brachos that were given, you know, each of the shvatim only heard the brachos that was given to their shevet, according to Ibn Ezra. In other words, you know, they're listed in one united unit in the end of the Torah, but in practice, he just gave each one, you know, the bracha that was appropriate for them.
At what point did he say,
that was apparently later. In other words, once he, you know, brought everybody together, right, it says...
Hazino takes place after
Zos HaBracha. Hazino takes place after Zos HaBracha, right. In other words, it says at the end of Parshas Vayelech, Vaydaver Moshe Ba'ozneh Kokahal Yisrael, Sivir Ashir HaZos HaTumah, Moshe Rabbeinu said the words of Hazino in the presence of the entire congregation. So apparently after this individual, you know, meeting with each of the shvatim, he called everybody back together and said, let me teach you Hazino. And that was it. After that, you know, he actually ascended the mountain. So like his last words, if you were Hazino, the way it comes out according to the Ibn Ezra. No, because Hazino ain't book on it good enough. You know, the Chikan Masal Amo. Yeah, okay, but in other words, it's, you know, but it ends off well. The Shiro of Hazino. It's just, you know, but it's serious. You know, you have to realize that, that you know, it gets worse before it gets better.
It's a very good one, as I said before. Because in the book, it says,
Right. Oh, it fits in well with the Pesukim themselves.
Yeah.
Right. Not Uladon about Don, but Uladon to Don, he said. Right. Very good. Right. Oh, this fits in very well. Ibn Ezra is the biggest champion of the idea of Ein Mukta Mu'ukha Batara, that there's no chronological order in Torah. So for the Ibn Ezra to put there's no Tabracha chronologically before Ha'azinu. It's just part of the course for the Ibn Ezra. It's just another day's work, you know, for the Ibn Ezra writing his commentaries. Nothing to get all that excited about. Wonderful. Okay, to say this. So next week, next Wednesday night, there's a very Rosh Hashanah. We're not going to have a Shia. However, it also works out well because does it work out well? I don't know if it works out well, but it works out how it works out. The following Wednesday night, Be'ezus Hashem, during our Sashimi Shuvah, we will have the Shia, and we're going to go backwards. And that Shia is going to be Parshas Hazino, which we will have read the previous Shabbos, right? In other words, this coming Shabbos. So we'll do Hazino during our Sashimi Shuvah. And then the last Shia in Ibn Ezra, I always give Leil Simchas Torah between Mincha and Ma'ariv. And at that time, we'll announce the mystery commentator for next year. Who we're going through, you know, to go through the Parshas HaShavua, as soon as I figure it out. All suggestions are definitely accepted, some of them even entertained. Okay, so we will we'll pick up the Ezra Hashem in 2 weeks with the Shia and Parshas HaZimul. I wish everybody a good Shabbos and a good Yom.